everybody. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Sherry Siegel. With you at the Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas for living a more positively minded life. And one of the ways you learn, and one of the ways you become more positive, is you learn more about things. And things trigger your thinking, you know, and it's nice to be a person who thinks. I remember a line in Inherit the Wind, the movie Inherit the Wind. Did you see that? Fabulous movie, boy. Pull it out every now and then. Spencer Tracy. With Frederick March, where Frederick March is being challenged on his theory about the Bible. And Frederick March and Spencer Tracy says to him at some point, did you ever think about the possibility that 9 days of creation didn't mean 9 days? And Frederick March, who was presenting it, who was William Jennings Bryan, said, I don't like to think about things I don't like to think about. Now, that essence, that's the essence right there. I don't like to think about things I don't like to think about. That's a basis of a lot of people's personalities, why they stay the way they are. Because sometimes people don't want to think about things they don't like to think about. Like when I was a kid, my dog died. I hate thinking about my dog who died, right? Because it always brings tears to my eyes. It makes me feel bad. I don't like thinking about it very much. Other people who have died and other relationships and other hurts that I've had, I don't like thinking about them because I don't like thinking about things I don't like thinking about. Other people dwell on them, of course. Now, why do I bring this up? I bring this up because Sherry and her gang, or I should say the Sherry gang, have been at work, and they've done some work here in uncovering something. This is the case of Ron Hubin, H-A-U-B-E-N. Ron Hubin was in Britain, and they discovered that he was not in a coma, and that for a number of years, he really was active and alert and thinking, but just unable to move.
Yep, we call that locked-in syndrome in neurology. And in fact, I can remember a patient when I was a resident at Jacoby Hospital who was indeed locked in.
How would you know that they were locked in? They moved their eyes, their fingers, what did they have?
It's very difficult to tell sometimes, because what happens in locked in is that information about the world goes in, but there's no way for the person in the body to react to it, because sometimes their muscles are paralyzed, sometimes their ability to create language is paralyzed, so they can't communicate with the outside world to let us know that something has been understood.
So there is a coma, which is kind of a vegetative state, right? A coma is like there is no brain activity. Is that the way that is?
In a coma, there's no thinking activity.
No thinking activity.
Right. And so that when someone is in a coma, information's not getting in or getting out. And in a vegetative state, it's a little less clear what that is. Some information may get in, and some activity seems to be happening, but we often don't know how to interpret it, we on the outside looking at the person in a vegetative state. In a locked-in syndrome, information is clearly going in, and the person is understanding everything. I don't know if you've seen the movie called The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. Have you seen that?
I think so.
That was about a French journalist who had a severe head trauma from a car accident. And he understood and saw everything, but he could not express that information to the outside world. He couldn't voice his response because he was paralyzed.
Hmm. Well, in this case of Ram Hubin, they were only able to find, by doing a new testing mechanism called a PET scan, they were able to find that there was brain activity, and then from that, they were able to trace him to eyelid movements, and they actually got his fingers to work on a keyboard, to where they actually were able to ask this man, who was locked in, who meant no ability to manifest except tiny little movements in his fingers and his eyelids, how he felt being inside there. And he talked about it. He communicated it. And through some therapy, which took a long period of time, he was able to eventually come out of that locked-in state. But now they knew he was home, you see. They didn't know he was home. They didn't know he was there. Why do we talk about this, especially around holiday season? Because there are so many people that you know who are locked in their own kind of ways. People get locked in many ways. Let's talk about the neurological condition first. In this one, PET scan. What is a PET scan? Is that when you get somebody's cat to walk around? And
not really. A PET scan looks at brain activity by looking at the metabolism of glucose. So it helps scientists understand where activity is happening in the brain. So by doing a PET scan, it bears witness to brain activity.
By studying the glucose. Now, in neuroscience, in the latest stuff on neuroscience that's being done, we've been talking about brain imaging. Is this what they use, PET scans?
This is one of the experimental types of scans that are used in neurology these days.
Shown to give you activity in certain portions of your brain. Like if they want to know, for example, they found people who had a hoarding syndrome, right? They showed activity in the anterior cingulate gyrus.
Gyrus.
How's that? Pretty good.
Very good. I'm impressed.
Right. And they found overactivity in that. And they said, this is very interesting because if we could give the guy a drug to help reduce the activity in the anterior cingulate gyrus, he would hoard less. And truthfully, it worked. They gave him some antidepressants that did just that. And it worked at reducing the hoarding. So we see people all the time that seem in their own ways strange. And we see them, and there are people, many of us, are just plain locked in. Now, you could be locked in neurologically like this person was. That's very, very severe. But you could be locked in emotionally. And here's my question to all of you. How are you locked in emotionally? And let's talk about some of the different kinds of being locked in emotionally. I mean, let's go to the real simple ones, like let's go to addiction. You know, addiction is a kind of a thing. There you are, you have a relationship with a chemical, a drug, a substance, a behavior, right? A compulsive behavior. You do this thing. Even a sexual compulsion, let's say a sexual addiction. Here you have sex all the time or frequently or two times a day or three times a day or one time a day, but it's constant. Your life is about sex. How would you be locked in? I mean, you have a relationship, right? You're having sex with people. Wouldn't that be non-locked in, Sherry?
The way I look at it is when you have an addiction, your focus of the world is only what you crave. So that if people who are not addiction sufferers basically look around them, they have a big view of what the world is, buildings, people, schools, all different things. But when you have addiction, your field of vision becomes your substance or your activity, and that takes over your ability to be in the moment.
I was listening to some music that someone had sent me, which had to do with love addiction, I think it was called. Not even love addiction. It was sexual, let me see what that was. And it was basically what the song was saying was the following. Oh, yeah, I'm going to have it right here, I know. It basically, the song said, I need sex to feel connected. And by hearing that, I was saying, wait a minute. That's just the opposite of what you need. Because sexual addiction means that you're not connected. You may be connected to yourself as you're connected to the outside world by having a discharge and an experience. But if your life is just about having an experience where you're stimulated and you have a discharge and then that puts you to rest and you continue the rest of your life, you're in the same place you've always been. You haven't changed. You're locked in.
Right. Sometimes it's a momentary high or a momentary feeling of connection during sex, during taking drugs, having food. They're momentary senses of well-being, but they're gone in a flash. And the more the addiction progresses, the craving increases, and the shorter the time is that the person feels connected or feels that their cravings are quelled.
So, and when you have this shorter time that your feelings are quelled, your life becomes about the thing itself.
Exactly.
And that's it. It's just about the thing, and it's not about people. What's interesting about that? What's important about that? You know, let's talk about Thanksgiving. We're coming up to the holidays. Some of the most difficult time for people, and a beautiful time for many other people. But at the holidays, sometimes when people perceive what they should be doing and how they should be behaving, Thanksgiving starts our highest suicide rate. It is the time when depression comes on in its fullest force. A lot of that may have to do with the fact that we have a shorter light cycle, that there's less light outside. But depression just kind of looms, and the mind is looking at everybody who's celebrating these holidays except you. And even you who are celebrating in such a tight way. I know a man who has his Thanksgiving is regimented. His family regiment is that they must be preparing food. It must be presented at exactly the right moment. Everyone must be sitting at the table just as the souffle comes out. You have to be, it's every second is timed. And if you go to the bathroom, people get angry at you because this is the time. Now, of course, this is run by a terrorist woman who is doing the cooking, who is getting everybody to understand these are her commands. By the end of the meal, you have so much indigestion because this is good and this is good. And the truth of it is the food never tasted good because there was so much tension behind the preparation of it.
Right. It's about rigidity, and it's about the food, not about the holiday, which is giving thanks.
Thanks. The holiday is supposed to be, thank God we got this place from the Indians. No. Is that what we celebrate? Thank God we, what are we celebrating? I'm not exactly sure, but it is about celebrating something. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Hey, you know, on Thanksgiving, WBAI does a beautiful thing, and I hope they're doing it again this year with Teokasin, on presenting many, many, many of the Native American stuff that we are all should be grateful for as well. So here we are talking about being locked in, and I'm going back to this being locked in. So certain people with their addictions are locked in because you're at work. You're sitting with somebody you love. Or let's say you're not sitting with somebody you love at work. Let's say you're sitting with somebody you love in a movie house or just holding your arm around them. And you have a cigarette addiction, and you got to get up and you got to go smoke a cigarette outside because you're not allowed to smoke in the house. So there you are with your arm around your honey, and all of a sudden you got to get up and go outside and smoke a cigarette. Who do you have a date with? Who's your date with, you know? So you light up your other girlfriend, you have her outside, and you say, hey, hi, nice to see you, you know, L&M or whatever your name is. And so you light it up, and you have your cigarette, and you relax, and you take it down, and you throw your cigarette away, and you go back inside to your other girlfriend. Addictions are like that. They're like multiple relationships.
It's a great point. It takes you away from the moment because your mind is not on your arm around the girlfriend. Your mind is on, when can I have the next cigarette? When would it be appropriate me? Will it look bad if I have another cigarette right away?
And the trouble with it is, of course, you're never home. Now, there are some people where this gets really severe. There is a diagnostic category in psychiatry called the schizoid personality disorder. And let's tell you about this, because I want you to hear about locked in a different kind of way. Armand DeMille with Dr. Sherry Siegel. We're talking about the locked-in syndrome, which is a neurological condition under which people are awake, but they look comatose. You wouldn't even know that they're there. But they found through signals, through testing, through a lot of the new neuroscience and brain testing, they found that there's activity there with people who people might have thought were comatose for year after year. So now we're talking about personality types and a personality criteria that would kind of talks about what it's like to be really on the inside but not look like you're on the inside to the average eye.
Well, there's something called the schizoid personality type, and that's in the DSM. The DSM describes that as a person who doesn't enjoy close relationships, even with family members. Someone who really prefers solitary activities.
Yeah, and not enjoying activity with other people. You just got to kind of get that. You're solitary. You think about, I'm going to go visit with my family this weekend. I'm going to go have a Thanksgiving time. The family invites me, and you say to yourself, I don't really like it. And you don't know. You don't know. Is it you or is it them? Every time I go up there, they talk about such mundane things, and they pick on me, and so on and so forth. Why can't I just enjoy them? Well, because you may be the kind of person that is locked into an antisocial kind of... antisocial almost sounds like it's deeper than it is, but it's a non-social way of being. I don't like being close to people. I don't like being close to people. I'm afraid of being close to people.
And there are also social anxiety disorders these are people who, in a social situation, feel fearful that they're going to be exposed or that they're vulnerable. And so they fear being with other people.
I would imagine it's a little like being a mouse in a field. You know, I mean, you run, you're worried. Is somebody going to eat me up at any moment? Is somebody going to come and get me at any moment? I have to be careful. I have to not make too much noise. I have to get out of here. You know, there's something about that social anxiety fear that is just, I am going to be humiliated, and then I'm going to be found out, I'm going to be exposed, and in effect, I'm going to die. Many people have that fear, and as a result of it, they stay indoors.
And in fact, you were talking about addiction before. Isolation is one of the tenets of addiction. People prefer to be alone with their substance or activity and not really connect with other people.
But, you know, so therefore, Sherry, we have to ask the question, well, then maybe they do have a relationship. Maybe it's a relationship better than none, you know what I mean? Maybe the addicts at least found a substance to be related to, right? Okay, I'm related to my marijuana.
Absolutely. In a lot of ways, the substance doesn't talk back. It's predictable. They don't have to worry about unpredictable things happening or experiences. So it becomes a friend, a familiar, quote-unquote, friend.
But there gets to be a difficulty, because if only it would stay the way it is. You know, it's like most mates that you marry, they never stay the way they are anyway. Why don't you just stay the way you are? Nope. No, the old addictions, they begin saying, yeah, but if you want to get the charge from me that you got last week, if you want to get it, you need just a little more this week. You got to just change a little more. You just got to add a little more and add a little more. And that becomes a problem. You have to keep adding to it to keep the same amount of it going. And if you try to remove yourself from it, you crash, which is another difficult thing to face. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel. So we're talking about locked-in syndrome. People you know are locked in behind their addictions. Agoraphobia.
Those are people who fear going to the marketplace or really going out of their homes. Sometimes people with agoraphobia also fear going out of their normal routine. So their routine is familiar, but anything outside of the routine gives them great anxiety and fear.
And again, you know, locked in. You're locked in. Locked in by love, locked in by fear, locked in by fear of rejection. Locked in. So one wonders who's better off. Is the better off person the person who sits at home alone and does nothing? Or is it the person who buries themselves in some meaningless party, you know, where the party is absolutely empty and meaningless? What do you think works better for you? What do you think? You've already made your choices, I know. Let's look at other personality characteristics about this personality. Mm-hmm. The schizoid disorder is what we're talking about.
Well, a schizoid person actually has very little interest in even sexual experiences with another person. Again, it goes back to their wish to be solitary and to not have to interact with other people.
And there's not enough interactive juice there, you know, Sherry? Because if you had the stuff, the oxytocin, the dopamine, if you had all the stuff that made you have a wonderful, passionate experience with somebody else, and it was a terrific experience, well, you might stick in there and want to do it again. So what we're saying is when you have this kind of a shut-off personality, I'll bet their hormones, I'll bet their neurotransmitters, I bet everything is dulled down to keep them in isolation, and the safest place is to be alone.
And it makes me think about mirror neurons. Those are the neurons that help us mimic what someone else, information that other people are giving us. And, for example, if a mother smiles and coos and shows a lot of love, a child will learn that from his or her mom, or any parent, of course, or any loving person. If we lack those mirror neurons, we'd never learn how to look back at someone with love and how to show love and show compassion. So it makes me wonder if the mirror neurons are involved with someone with schizoid personality or even autism, where kids can't really mimic a parent's facial movements, or and often they don't make eye contact.
They've done some experimenting with using oxytocin spray, I think, nasal spray, where they've given it to certain people who are naturally removed from people. But they gave them the bonding chemical, you know, as a nasal spray, and they found that these people did want to bond more. This is Armand DeMille with Sherry Siegel. We're in this interesting place where we're talking about people who like to shut themselves off. And they just like to remove themselves because I understand. You know, you get to a certain point in life, you get tired of hearing the same old stuff, you get tired of criticism, you get tired of it. And you just don't want to be a part anymore. But here's my problem. I think you, whoever you are, I think you're a valuable asset to this planet. I think if you're listening to WBAI, you are a beautiful, incredible, great potential leader. Because you know things and you understand things that most people don't understand, especially if you listen to this program. Therefore, you become one of the teachers that are potentially out there. Therefore, I don't want you to resign. I don't want you to quit. I want you to join us. I want you to reach out in your own kind of way. Now, if that means volunteering some time to go work in a soup kitchen, just so you could smile at somebody, then you're doing, I think, the kind of job we're meant to do here. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, 212. Now, we're going to take a call a little later, right? Now we're going to stick with this. When just talking about this personality type that gets locked in, we always want you to know that they have very little pleasure, if any, in activities. And they lack in really close friends. The other thing about them is if you praise them or give them, affection or they don't respond much to it. They don't really respond. You could tell them how fabulous they look. It's just kind of a dull, uh-huh.
And it's the same with criticism. If you criticize them, it doesn't seem to affect them either.
So this, when we get to this level of personality, you really want to try to help a person with this, trying to step into the world. But how are they going to do it? They're going to have to trust somebody. Now, just one other thing to understand is, like, there's another personality type called the schizotypal personality disorder. And this one is unusual because it's even more removed, and it has this pervasive pattern of social and interpersonal deficits marked by acute discomfort and a reduced capacity for close relationships, as well as being distorted in your perceptions. And the way the distortion happens is you make these what they call ideas of reference. Somebody says something and you use that as saying, but that refers to this part of me. You know, so it could be just a casual incident, somebody casually passing and saying, "Ride 'em, cowboy." And you could be saying to yourself, "You see, that was a homosexual advance meant towards me." So these kind of, once you start getting into that, you could do that all the time. And there are people who sit at home and they hear television messages and radio messages actually isolated and meant for them and meant to be critical of them. That becomes more severe as well. But again, what could you do if you know somebody like this? What can you do? Can you reach out? Can you give them a hand? Well, I don't know. What else do we know about people who withdraw, Sherry?
Well, I know that you're a big fan of the Enneagram, and that if you look at the fifth personality type, the investigator, that person is thought to be intense and cerebral, very perceptive, innovative, also secretive and isolated. So the person with this investigator personality type is someone who takes a step back into their mind where they feel more capable. The belief is that they're safe in their mind and that eventually they'll figure out how to do things and rejoin the world. So that these are people who have a great fear of not being able to do things, not being capable. They fear being judged. So if they stay back from the world and don't venture out, they never have to put themselves on the line. They never have to put themselves at risk. So they cherish their isolation.
You know, cherish your isolation. Cherish your isolation. What a beautiful phrase. You know, the trouble is, as we said, the more isolated you are, the more the next guy is isolated. Because if you're isolated from me, then that makes me isolated from you in some way. And I wish there was a way you could reach out. I wish there were a way you could find to connect. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Sherry Siegel. We're talking about the locked-in personality. The research on it, which is just recent, is phenomenal. Neurological testing of different kinds have allowed us to find brain activity. What's a SPECT scan? Do you mind, Sherry? This is where you scan for a SPECT.
A SPECT scan looks at the blood flow in different regions of the brain. So when a region is active and engaged, there's greater blood flow there. And so it's evidence of brain function. And that's what a SPECT scan is. So whereas a PET scan looks at glucose metabolism, a SPECT scan looks at blood flow.
And what would be an advantage? When would you use a SPECT scan as opposed to a PET scan?
You might want to look at someone who's had a stroke of some sort. And a stroke, if you remember, are plugs or leaks that prevent blood getting to the places that it needs to get to nourish our brains. And so a SPECT scan can help pick out little islands of activity, sometimes where we thought there might not be some activity, or where a stroke may have happened, yet there's still some retained function and still some retained blood flow.
And I remember recently somebody was doing a scan, a sonic scan. Is it sonic, or where you can scan for vascular disorder and you can look for possible strokes as well? There are so many new tools out there.
Well, I think you're thinking of an ultrasound.
Ultrasound,
which
yes.
Also, you're exactly right. It uses the sound or sonic waves that it bounces onto structures to see whether something is flowing. Usually that's used to see if there's a blockage in the carotid artery, which takes blood to the brain. It can be used for arteries in other parts of the body when they're blocked up.
In the legs and so on and so forth, just to find out. Trying to find out that there is no stroke before a person has a stroke. Or if they had a stroke, to try to do something about it.
Right, if they're at risk, exactly. If the carotid artery is clogged up, sometimes they can do a carotid bypass surgery or put in a stent, which is like a tube that holds the blood vessel open.
Very interesting. 212-209-2900 is our number. We'll be taking your calls when we get back from our short break. When we get back, a little music for the holiday season, and then we'll continue with you.
Excuse me, constable! Caught the West End murderer yet?
We'll catch him, don't you worry, sir.
That's the spirit.
All aboard for the Highlands!
Hi, this is Charles Edwards. I play Richard Hannay in the 39 Steps at the Court Theatre.
Hi, this is Jennifer Farron. I play three different characters in the 39 Steps.
I'm Cliff Saunders. I play Man One. And I'm Arnie Burton, and I play Man 2.
And you're tuned to
WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
99.5 FM, streaming on the web at WBAI.org.
Read all about it! Read all about it!
The bell for freedom still rings.
Earthwatch, transterrestrial radio with Robert Knight, returns to WBAI. Wednesdays at midnight. I'm Robert Knight, inviting you to rejoin us on Earthwatch, a live, freeform radio excursion into space, science, news, politics, metaphysics, music, the arts, and more.
That the man in the moon must have found.
That's Earthwatch, transterrestrial radio, Wednesdays at midnight. On the new WBAI, 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio in New York.
For as long as there's life, there's still a day.
Oh, Grandfather, thank you for this beauty around me.
You're listening to Sky Redhawk do songs from spirit, with that name being Thank You, Grandfather. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM with Dr. Sherry Siegel. We're talking about the locked-in syndrome, you know. It brings to mind, Sherry, you were going to say about the sounds of nature.
Mm-hmm. If people have seen that movie we talked about earlier, about the French journalist Jean-Dominique Balbi, my French isn't too good, but that movie, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, showed what it was to experience a locked-in syndrome. So this journalist, after having severe head trauma in a car injury, was not able to communicate. But what the sense that you got when you watched the movie is that he experienced the immense beauty of nature. Maybe he experienced it more intensely because he really didn't have any other ability to put information out. So he took in everything that was around him.
Hmm. Quite beautiful. Science Daily, March 19, 2009. With Mother's Day, Father's Day, and high school and college graduations coming up, there'll be plenty of gift-giving and well-wishing, as we know. When those start pouring in, let yourself be grateful. It's the best way to achieve happiness, according to several new studies. A guy named Ted Kashtan, associate professor of psychology at George Mason University, says that gratitude, the emotion of thankfulness and joy in response to receiving a gift, is one of the most essential ingredients for living a good life. Now, my friends, gratitude, which is not necessarily giving, that's one thing. But gratitude, where can you express it? Where can you feel it? Gratitude is like laughter. You know, it's an amazing thing. If you could let yourself feel gratitude without humbling yourself too much, without saying, oh, what a beautiful meal you made, therefore can I promise to wash your car for the next 74 days. You know, I mean, without doing silly things like that, but just being able to show and feel gratitude in some way increases the state of mind. He found that when it comes to achieving well-being, gender plays an important role because men are much less likely to feel and express gratitude than women. And previous studies on gratitude have suggested there might be a difference in gender, so we had to explore it further. In one study, a guy named Kashtan interviewed college-age students and older adults, advised them to evaluate a recent episode in which they received a gift. He found that the women compared with the men reported feeling less burden and obligation and greater levels of gratitude which presented the gift. So there it is right there. Men see gifts as a responsibility. Yes. And so what they feel is they have to kind of hold back. I can't show you that I really love what you're giving me because you may own me in some way. If I show my gratitude, then you're going to have possession of me. Are you like that, guys? I mean, you guys listening out there, are you somebody who's reluctant to show how grateful you are for gifts or things you receive that people give you?
And he even said that older men reported greater negative emotions when the gift giver was another man. So it really made me think, is this a power issue? Is this something where the man then had to show that he was capable, the man, the receiver, was felt that he needed to show that he could give as well? So giving signified a sense of power. And receiving seemed to give a sense of being lower or having less power.
Well, it kind of makes sense. It makes sense, you know, Sherry, it makes sense that you would feel that way or that somebody would feel that way. How could we turn that around? How do I turn that around to imagine myself? And I know one way that I do frequently, and it's where I go to any service place. When I go to a service place or a place that serves me, I try as much possible to go out of my way to thank the person who serves me. Now, I don't do it, you know, in a ridiculous kind of way, and I don't go overboard. But I consciously make an effort to show the person that I appreciate their working there. I've tried the other day, I was calling somebody for something, and you could hear the disdain on the voice of the person who was taking the order. And I wanted to let them know, you know, it's like this job that you think you're doing may be such a horrible job that you're doing in taking these orders, but we really appreciate you. But they clearly couldn't get an ounce of that.
Yeah.
So showing appreciation seems to be very important.
A way to look at that situation, the giver and taker, is to think of them as peers. Think of ourselves as peers when we're given something and when we are giving and when we are receiving. Because sometimes we're the receivers, and then other times we may be the givers. So they're, hopefully it's fairly well balanced. And in a way, it's like passing on what you've gotten. So if I've received something, if I then give it away, that balances the giving and the receiving, so that it's not a power play. And also, it's helpful to remember, I think, that the person who's giving also feels good. So the giver is feeling good by letting me receive something from her or him. So it's really a symbiotic relationship. Both people gain something.
212-209-2900 is our number here at WBAI, 212-209-2900. We may get a chance to take a few of your calls today, because we will not get a chance to take calls after today, because tomorrow we won't take calls. We won't be on air. Friday we won't be with you, so it won't be until next week. So maybe you have something to say about either one, either the shut-in or the receiving, and saying thank you. You know, some days you just want to stay in bed and hope the whole world forgets you exist. You know, some people feel that way. A guy named David Columbia was having one of these days in New York City. He was worn down by the hustle and bustle, no longer excited and proud about relocating to Manhattan as he had been weeks earlier. He imagined himself a hot young talent looking at the magazine world by storm, only to end up doing grunt work as a low-level assistant on a barely making it salary. He couldn't afford his own place and felt uncomfortable sponging off a friend. He said, "I was rethinking everything, my ability as a writer." But that Saturday morning, he wanted to stay in bed, but no, he had to fetch a photo for work. And he just came across, he said, "I don't know what possessed me, but I decided to start counting things along the way that make me happy." He said, "I just wanted to see how many pleasing things I came across." First on his list was a mother walking her baby, all bundled up in a stroller. He said, "That little face just made me smile." Then he saw a jet in the sky. "Flying always captivates me," he said. And from the sizzling smells at bistros to eye-catching store window displays, David acknowledged one thing after another that brightened his mood. How often do you get a chance to do that, my friends? When you're walking down the street, instead of taking the critical look of everything around you, what's it like to focus just on the things that lift your spirit?
It's clearly being in the moment. It's what he called the walk of thanks. But really, if you listen to all the things that he describes, they're completely being present for what was surrounding him.
Well, for the good of what was surrounding him, because he didn't want to be present for the bad of what was surrounding him.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean?
You're right.
What he's doing is he's saying, "I choose to focus on the positive, because the rest of the time I always focus on the negative." But it's a fabulous experience to walk down the street, and I've tried this, and just see how many things will I see that delight me within a one-block walk, and you'll be shocked. You will have to report back to us or send us an email, you know, at thepositivemind.com to let me know what you discovered. Let's take one of your calls, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take a call. Whoops. Not there.
Well, if you think about Robert Emmons, he's a professor at UC Davis. He looks at maintaining an attitude of gratitude as a discipline. And many of us have learned from early in our lives to focus on the negative, not on the positive. So if we choose to focus on the negative, we have that sense of feeling heavy, feeling down, burdened. But we can flip it around like the person you talked about, David Columbia, who actually chose to look at the positive things around him.
If we focused on what we, if we tried hard to focus on, if we tried hard to focus on what was positive in our lives, my friends, what was really positive, it would not be easy. You know, but take a look, anything, somebody giving you a surprise smile. You know, because a lot of people, you know, I remember one man. Never forget this man. He was just one of these men who was a ladies' man. And all he cared about were women, meeting women who he could possibly seduce. And a man started talking to him once, and he said to that man, he said, "What are you talking to me for?" He says, "I only want to talk to women. Why are you talking to me?" And the man was talking to him because the man thought he would be an interesting guy to know. And I thought to myself, what a poor guy. What a poor guy to have missed the opportunity that somebody might have found him interesting. What if we chose to focus on being valued by a friend? Whether we value that friend or not, or the memory of a colleague's face when they received a surprise birthday cake at work, or the smooth ride we had in getting into work this week. As science is now proving, feeling grateful can actually make us healthier, literally. Practicing this gratitude makes you actually be better, physically better in your life. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. We're taking calls. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hi, good afternoon. I want to ask you two quick questions. I know there are other people that want to talk to you. I'm being aware in the two topics that you talk about today, I'm being aware of things that I see myself doing. The first one, I'm not the type of guy that I don't like people. I love people. I like to be close to them. I like to even live in places where there are a lot of people. I don't like to live in houses too separate from each other, all kind of things. But at the same time, I always see myself having trouble with being in the wrong circle of people, not being connected to them, maybe because they don't see what I see, or that's the way I see it. And then I kind of like don't look to be with them too much, and I'm including even family. And the other topic, which is the giving, I always have trouble with giving in the way of me receiving it. When it comes to, let's say, a birthday or Christmas or Valentine's Day or any of these days that you mentioned, I don't have a problem with getting something that day. It really bothers me a little bit that I have to get, especially when it is something material, that I have to get something that day because of what it is, instead of just any other day and not necessarily being material, just by your presence or even a flower or that kind of stuff. I don't know if I made myself clear.
Well, let me ask you a question then. How often do you buy yourself a gift every day? How often do you do something for yourself every day that you say, this is a gift to myself?
Not every day, but I think that I do it, you know, pretty good consistently.
So you think
not every day, though, not every day.
And how do you feel about doing that for other people?
That's a good question. I like to do that a lot for other people, but I like to find a good meaning in it. I like to find something that it is very well connected to that person. I just don't like to, buy a pair of shoes or whatever. I like to find out, do my search, see what this person loves, what will make him that the most passionate moment for him or the most exciting moment for that person.
No, I understand. You know, one of the beautiful things is, have you ever had any children?
Yeah, I do have a child right now, 3 years old.
Okay, 2 years old is perfect. You buy your child a present. You could buy them the most exciting present in the world, and they could be done within 5 minutes. They could not care about it 5 minutes later, or they could just pay attention to the box and think the box is more interesting than the present itself. Yep. That there's somewhere in life, it's when you think overthink a gift, a person doesn't get a chance to really experience the gift. It's like Thanksgiving. I know, as I was talking about, I know people who prepare Thanksgiving with such tension that by the time they put the food on the table, the people who are receiving the food already have indigestion because it's so much tension and too much thought has gone into it. That the gift is not the meal. The gift is getting together. So what I need of you is for you, who knows about yourself, to experiment by being looser with your gifts. And being looser means not necessarily this is a significant gift, but this is an insignificant gift. And you'll find your child enjoys it just as much, maybe even more. Maybe even more.
Can you give me an idea of how to fill myself that way?
Sure. You're coming, when you go home tomorrow, buy a flower for your child. Children don't like flowers necessarily. But they may like flowers. But it's an insignificant gift, a flower for a child.
Well, you know what I mean? It might look to us insignificant. Maybe it can become something significant for the child, maybe the color or the shape of it.
Something will become significant, but you don't have to determine that.
Exactly. And the next time you get a gift, you might think or think in your mind that the person who's giving you the gift is enjoying the giving as much as he or she hopes you are enjoying the receiving. So that in a lot of ways, by allowing yourself to receive a gift, you're giving somebody joy. And that kind of thing evens things out, so it's not a one-upmanship.
That's a great point.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Mill with Dr. Sherry Siegel. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. You know, other people recognize that these were, that he was, not only was he being grateful, but the thing that you just said, you know, Sherry, I had a friend who used to give me, every Christmas she gave me some kind of, was one of these little characters, I forget what they're called. It was like a little figurine.
Troll doll?
Like that, right? But something I didn't like. Something that kind of made me feel a little weird every time I got one. But every time she gave me the gift, I knew I was going to get this Christmas, New Year's, birthday, whatever it was. And I said, oh, no, you know, not a one of those things, right? Until at one point, and I would watch her beam every time I would open it and appreciate it. And I used to keep it for a little while and then give it away. And then one time, I was on I forget where I was. I was somewhere. Oh, some man in a coffee shop gave me one of those Italian fruitcakes. And he gave it to me and said, here, here's gratitude for you. He said, Merry Christmas. And I went upstairs with the fruitcake and had some friends up there. And they said, oh, you don't want that fruitcake, do you? We won't put that out at the table. I said, oh, no. It's the most important gift I've received. It was from somebody who I barely knew. And that appreciation changed my whole attitude. It was almost like I had an attitude shift waiting to happen. Not that the gift made the difference. So from that day on, every troll doll I ever received, I really appreciated. Because just like you're saying, I loved what was going on in the person behind it. You know,
so it was the catalyst. It was like, yeah, that fruitcake was the catalyst.
It kind of got me to that point. 212-209-2900. Take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I just was listening to what you were talking about positivity and gratitude. And one thing that came to mind, the philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche.
What about Nietzsche?
He was, you know, very sick all of his life, and he was a genius, but he had a lot of physical ailments, and he suffered greatly all of his life. But one of my favorite things he ever said, and he said it at the end of his life, is his concept of amor fati, which is Latin for love fate. And basically one of his quotes goes, my formula for greatness in a human being is amor fati, the love of fate, that one wants nothing to be different, not forward, not backwards, not in all eternity. And I just thought that was beautiful and just...
the love of safe, S-A-F-E?
Fate, F-A-T-E.
Oh, love of fate.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that it's a Nietzsche quote. I was quoting Nietzsche yesterday, who he said, you know, when you look into an abyss, eventually the abyss looks back at you.
Oh, that's a great quote, yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's what I hear in his words is that he's loving what is, and that he's not looking to change it or make it new or different. He's just seeing what is.
Sorry.
What do you think?
Well, because he was all about how life is, like, he was all about the affirmation of suffering. Suffering is an unavoidable part of life, and so when he said amor fati, he meant love everything in its totality, the good, the bad. With, you know, he was all about affirming. Justifying life as it is, and even if it is suffering and pain. But I just thought that was really amazing. That
thanks for bringing that, Stuart. That was a nice gift that you bring us.
No problem.
Thank you. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind with Dr. Sherry Siegel. We're going to have to be going. Thank you. I mean, thank you to all of you out there. My gratitude to everybody who makes this program what it is, and for your calling in and demanding that we stay with you year after year. So as we go out, I think I will play you my British tune of gratitude. And this comes from Scrooge, where finally Scrooge, after being Scrooge for so long, turns around and gives out a few gifts. And one of the receivers step up to him and say, "Thank you very much."
You finished? Not yet? All right, we'll give you one more time. Thank you very much. The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. Armand will be back tomorrow afternoon at 1 p.m. right here over listener-supported commercial-free community radio, WBAI. We're in New York, and we're broadcasting at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. You can also, that's right, WBAI.org. That's where you can connect with us online at WBAI.org. Coming up at 2 p.m., the CCCP.
What seems to be the trouble, soldier? You look a little bit worried.
Well, I am, Chaplain. Just a little bit.
Actually, there's no need to be worried, as the Army has taken all of the necessary precautions to...
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.